It's good to see you this evening. Let's all open our Bibles to the 57th Psalm, Psalm 57. This is a Psalm of David, and it's written according to the heading here when he has fled from Saul in the cave. Be merciful to me, O God, be merciful to me, for in thee my soul takes refuge. In the shadow of thy wings I will take refuge, till the storms of destruction pass by. I cry to God Most High, to God who fulfills his purpose for me. He will send from heaven and save me. He will put shame upon those who trample upon me. God will send forth his steadfast love and his faithfulness. I lie in the midst of lions that greedily devour the sons of men. Their teeth are spears and arrows, and their tongues are sharp swords. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let the glory be over all the earth. Let thy glory be over all the earth. They set a net for my steps, and my soul was bowed down. They dug a pit in my way, but they have fallen into it themselves. My heart is steadfast, O God, my heart is steadfast. I will sing and make melody. Awake, O my soul, awake, O harp and lyre. I will awake the dawn. I will give thanks to thee, O Lord, among the peoples. I will sing praises to thee among the nations, for thy steadfast love is great to the heavens, thy faithfulness to the clouds. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let thy glory be over all the earth. This is we would think when we first read it that it's a normal psalm. You know, some of the psalms he's complaining and some of them he's praising God. But this psalm has a little bit special turn to it because David's in a jam. David is fleeing for his life from Saul. And he has this opportunity in a cave to kill him, and he refuses to do it, remember? And then he's still in the jam, and what's he going to do? What will he do? Well, he's in danger, of course. The armies that are after him are intent on his destruction, and he has given up one of the opportunities that he has to end this madness. What he does is he worships. Verse 1 and 2, we see him as he worships God. Instead of looking around at the problems that he's facing, which are real and serious and could end in his death, he believes that he has protection from God. And so he looks to God. Saul is like a terrible storm, he tells us. A terrible storm that is destroying everything in its path. And David's in his path. But David still believes that God will shelter him. And in verse 2, he begins a prayer. It's an interesting prayer. He doesn't pray that the teeth of Saul be knocked out or that his army will come to naught. Instead, he worships God. And he worships God in verse 2. Look at verse 2 again. He worships God with faith and hope instead of wishful thinking. He's not saying, I wish there was some way you could get me out of this jam. He's telling God that he has full confidence in him. How could he do that? How could he have optimism? How could he have this courage? How could he be not concerned about an army that's right out there going to destroy him if they can get their hands on him? He worships, not wishes, but he worships because he lives with a promise. He has a promise from God. When he was just a young man, Samuel came to his family. And he was brought out before Samuel, the prophet of God, who spoke the words of God. And when Samuel spoke from God, it was God speaking. And Samuel anointed him and told him he was king, or would be. So in spite of all this that's going on, verse 3, in spite of everything that's happening to him, he believes, if I'm going to be king, then God's going to have to save me. If I'm going to be king, he will have to protect me. Because what is a non-negotiable to David is that God keeps his promises. God keeps his promises. And he's been given a promise. And he believes it. And he clings to that more than he believes his own eyes, more than he believes the trumpets that are playing around him there in the wilderness, more than he notices how the armies are coming together and how they're trying to surround him, more than he's running out of caves to hide in, he believes the promise of God. He believes that God will save him, verse 3. He believes that God will protect him. He believes that God will keep his promises. And woe be to anybody, verse 3, that stands in the way of God keeping his promises. David believes the real constant here, the real thing that doesn't change, is the steadfast love of God. Actually, he believes the real thing that doesn't change is mighty God. And that a quality of God is the fact that his steadfast love endures forever. How many times does he put that line in the Psalms that he preaches and sings? He knows that this faithfulness from God is complete. God will never let him down. God will keep his promise. Now, he doesn't do everything we want him to do. He doesn't do it on our timetable, but God never lies, never. And God's going to keep this promise that he's made to him. In verse 4, he says, it's obvious the place I'm at is dangerous. It's obvious that I'm like living in a den of lions here, and they're hungry, and they're wanting to destroy me. That's all they got on their mind, is finding a way to claw into the spot where I am and eat me. But he also knows that not only is he in a dangerous place, now there might have been literal lions in those caves too, but the real problem he's got is Saul and his army. His enemies are like those lions. His enemies have single purpose. They're out there for one thing, and that's to kill David. They're out there for one thing, to bring this David business to an end. And they're armed, and they're equipped, and they have purpose and a plan to accomplish that. But and yet he still worships God in spite of all of this, in spite of this really bad news that his sentries bring back, in spite of the reports that come from his scouts, he still worships God, and he praises God. And what does he say about God? Look at verse 5. God is above all of the earth. He is not controlled by how many armies there are or what's happening here at this particular moment. He knows that these enemies are dangerous. Look at verse 6. He says they put traps everywhere. I have to constantly be aware that they're closing gaps and they're watching roads and they're put me in a terrible position. And he even admits in verse 6 that he's afraid or has been afraid. He sees, until he sees what? He sees them fall into their own traps. He sees them running into each other. He sees them digging a pit to trap David in and fall into it themselves. He not only has a promise from God, but in his experiences, he sees that God keeps his promises. And so he has this double blessing that he has that brings us faith, reveals this faith that he says. So in verse 8 now, he tells that this is what he's praying. This is what he's calling out for us to do. Look at verse 8. He's telling us in verse 8, he says, listen to me, God. I'm going to make you a promise. Listen to me, God. I will not leave you. I'm with you, God. I trust you. I worship you. I praise you. And then he says something kind of weird. He said, when the sun comes up, I'll already be there praising you. Now, I think this means, the rest you have to take for granted, but this is my idea of what he means by that. I'm worshiping now, and I'll still be worshiping when the sun comes up in the morning. Imagine you're out there in that Badlands where he is, where all the caves and the canyons and everything. And during the night when things are especially frightening, during the night when things are especially dark, during the night, David goes from his fear and his frustration to centering on this thing about God, this thing that God has made promises to him, This thing that God has all power and that God is everywhere, even in this wretched land where he's hiding out, that God can do anything he wants to do, and that God's steadfast love never ceases. And he just can't help it. He starts worshiping. Now, when David worships, he especially sings. And think about it. You're over in the camp of Saul, and at first the lookouts or the guards, they start hearing something echoing through the canyons. They can't really pinpoint where it is. But it's singing. It's singing praises to God. It's jubilant worship, and it's getting louder. You know what David's doing? He is getting with it. He is singing with all of his heart and all of his lungs and all of his might. And he's praising God and he's worshiping God. And when Saul hears it, it must have broke his heart. He should be hiding. He should be trying to creep out of here. Instead, he's standing on a hill someplace in the mouth of a cave, and he's shouting and singing to God. He's telling God, you are who you are. You know who you are. You're above the heavens. You're over all of this. It would be like us trying to control a cloud. But you know what you can do, and you know what you promised me, and I want you to know I believe it. I believe what you promised. And he's singing all night long. He should be sleeping, shouldn't he? He should be making plans, shouldn't he? He should be sharpening his sword, shouldn't he? No, he is worshiping God because he knows where his help comes from. He knows where his strength is. He knows what's happening to him and what will happen to him. And he knows if he gets out of this, it'll be because of God. And he wants God to know it. So he's not only telling God, I'm with you, I'll always be with you, I'm steadfastly yours, I belong to you, I'm the sheep of your pasture, I'm yours, whatever you want from me you can have, and I know you're mine, and I believe your promises. And so while everyone else is not sleeping very well because this maniac out there in the desert is singing songs of praise to God, this man is being renewed. This man is being made stronger. This man, did you ever come to church on a Wednesday night when you really didn't feel like it? Did you ever come when you thought, I just can't get out of this chair, but you came anyway? Wasn't it amazing that sometimes you actually felt better when the service was over than you did when you got here? Then you know a little taste of what's happening with David here. When the sun comes up in the morning, I'll be right here worshiping you, God. Then what does he say? You'll find me worshiping you. You'll find me with you. And then he says, look at verse 8, I'm always grateful. And I want everybody to know it. I want all the people to know it. Verse 9, he said, I'll always praise you among the nations. Now, what does all that mean? What does it mean? I want all the peoples to know it, and I will praise you among the nations. During this time that David has spent with God, in his mind and in his heart, he's already out of this difficulty that he's in. He's already past this sleeping in caves. He's already past this running from Saul. He's already past sleeping with a sword by his side and his sandals on him all the time. He's living in the future, and the future is he is God's king. He is King David. God promised it, and as far as he's concerned, he's already God's king. And he knows this, and he's projected it. And so what does he say? Everybody needs to know about who you are, God. Everybody needs to know about how great you are, and I'm going to tell them. Look at all those psalms that he writes. Look at what he did as a king. Everyone knew. And he said, when I'm king and other nations come in contact with me, they will know something. They will know that I'm your king, God, that I belong to you. They will know who you are because I'll tell them. Isn't that something, how he could move into another life like this? Isn't that something? That is a prayer, a song of faith that he's giving here. He's seeing the promises of God, as if they've already happened. Because by faith, even though he can't see it yet, he knows they're going to happen. Why do we believe in the second coming? Because God told us, and God doesn't lie. Why do we believe that our will be restored to God in fullness? Why do we believe that we'll be a part of his glory? Why do we believe that if we're dead, he'll raise us from the dead, and if we're not dead, he'll bring us up to meet him in the air? Because he promised it. Why do you think Paul and Silas sang in that jail cell? Why do you think Peter wouldn't back down on the testimony that he gives? Why do you think they lived the way they lived? Why do you think those first Christians were dying like sheep being slaughtered and they refused? It was the most perplexing thing to the Romans they'd ever seen. These people won't back down. Why? Because they believe no matter what's going on right now, they even called it this slight momentary affliction. This problem that you're going to have to face for a little while, but always they went back to the promises. You know, we don't live on understanding. It'd be nice to understand more, but that's not what where we get our breath, where we get our life. We don't live on being able to comprehend how all things are going to work together. We live by promise. We live because God said it. We believe it. And that's what David is saying. When I'm king, when other nations are coming and bringing tribute, when I'm going into battle against them, they'll know one thing. They're not just fighting the last king they fought. They're fighting the king that's been put there by God himself. They'll know. He even knew that when he was a boy, didn't he? He told that giant, "You come at me with sword and spear and javelin, and I come at you in the name of the Lord. This day you will be dead, and I won't." He knew that. How did he know such a thing? Because he lived by faith. This is an amazing thing. I'm God's king. In verse 9, we see he's already passed through all of this, and he's living the promise. Look at verse 10. He says, "My praise is to you, O God. My praise is directed to you, not to my brave, valiant men, of whom he had many. They're called mighty men, not in his ability to throw a stone or swing a sword. My praise is always to you, God." Look at verse 10. "And I direct it to you in heaven," because that's where you are. "And I want everyone," look at verse 11, "to know how great you are. Everyone on earth to know what he knows." It's almost like evangelism here at the end, isn't it? I want everybody to know what I know. And I know you. I know who you are. I know what you are. I know what you do. I know what you can do. I know what you will do. Because one thing I know about you is you don't lie. What a psalm. You'd never thought you would have heard that coming out of a cave, would you? You'd have never thought you'd have heard that as armies are closing the passes and setting up the traps, that this man is remembering who he is. If God wants to, he can transport me through the air if he wants to. If God wants to, he can open a new pass. God is his protector, and he knows it because God has made promises to him. Well, we weren't anointed to be kings, but we've been made some promises. We've been told by God that when we became a Christian that he adopted us. We are God's children. We've been told by God that he won't put anything in our path that we can't overcome or get around or get through. A promise from God. We've been told that Satan isn't allowed to come up with a new deal just for you. Everything you face, someone else has faced. We've been told by God or promised by God that all things work together for good to them that love the Lord. We've been promised by God that all we really have to worry about is being faithful. That's our job. And we can do that. It might be hard, but we can do that. We can be faithful. That's why our side, his side, is the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. He has nothing to prove to us. He's already shown us that he holds nothing back that we need. He gave us his own son, and he's made these glorious promises to us. So what should we do? We should live like that, shouldn't we? We should worship him with that kind of confidence, shouldn't we? That doesn't mean there are not lions out there wanting to eat us. It doesn't mean that we're not in a tight spot. That's not what it means. Some of you are sick. Some of you have diseases that doctors have told you there's no getting out of this. This is what's your lot in life. Some of us, our financial situation isn't what it ought to be. Some of us have loved someone and they don't love us back. Some of us are worried about there's actual people in the world who want us dead so badly they'll put bombs on their children and send them among us. Those are real. But there's something else that's real. There's something else that's real. And that's God. There's something else that's real. And it's more real than the liberal agenda in the world. It's more real than all of the kinds of aggressions that are going on around us that seem to be chipping away all the things that we usually have to defend ourselves with. And that's God. And he will keep his promises. He will keep his promises. He knows how many hairs we have on our head. He knows what's ahead for us, and he's already there. We don't know what's going to happen tonight or tomorrow, but we should be up all night praising him because we know how it's going to end. We know that we'll be in a big procession of glory. We know that we'll be with him, and we'll rejoice always. Even David knew that. He never heard the Sermon on the Mount, but he knew that. And he said, I'll be in the house of the Lord forever. Even David, way back there, knew this truth, this fundamental principle. If we're the people of God, God will never leave us. We may leave him, but he's not going to leave us. If we're in a jam, it's where we need to be. Not where we want to be. I'm sure David never took a vacation after he became king, back to those caves and said, here's the rock I slept on. That's not necessary because he's already living in the future. He's already living where he belongs. What would happen if we did that? What would happen if we really decided tonight, I'm going to believe God. I'm going to believe God more than I believe my eyes. I'm going to believe God more than I believe what my heart's doing right now. I'm going to believe God more than I believe what my feet are telling me. I'm going to believe God more than I believe Rush Limbaugh or whatever else I'm listening to. I'm going to believe God, that he is steadfast. He always loves us, and he always keeps his promises. Would it make any difference how we lived? I think it would, don't you? So why don't we do it? Why don't we become a fanatic like David? He's fanatic about something. And that's God. Why don't we praise him to the heavens? Why don't we worship him even in our difficulties? Why don't we stand there with, if we're going to bow to anybody, it'll be God, but not to anything else. The apostle said, if God is for us, what could people do to us? Who could possibly be against us? If we could understand that. No, if we could believe that. I don't know how God does all the things that he does, but I know he never lies. If you need to come back to God, if we're not with him, it's us that moved. Remember the old couple driving in the pickup? And she said, you know, we don't sit together like we used to. Used to, we were just like a two-headed person. And now look at us. And he said, I'm still where I always was. If we're not close to God, you know why. It's because we moved. He's steadfast. David said, I'm going to be steadfast too. What about you? Won't you come to Jesus while we stand and sing?